Chapter 3. Shards. 1.
We made it, said Kira. After so long spent traveling, arrival hardly seemed real.
Falcone popped his buckles. Time to say hi to the natives.
Not quite yet, said Koyich. He stood. Eyes and ears, you ugly apes. Exos free to disengage. Grab your battle rattle and get me a sit rep yesterday. And keep those drones out of the air until I give the order. You heard me, go!
Around them, the shuttle transformed into a bustle of activity as the Marines readied themselves to deploy. Before popping the airlock, they checked the atmosphere for unknown risk factors, and then scanned the surrounding area for signs of movement.
Anything?
Koyich demanded. One of the Marines from the Darmstadt shook his head.
No, sir. Check thermals.
Already did, sir. It's dead out there.
All right, move out. Exos take point.
Kira found herself crowded between the two entropists as the Marines assembled before the airlock.
Vera said, Isn't this most exciting?
Joris concluded. Kira tightened the grip on her blaster.
I'm not sure that's the word I'd choose.
She wasn't even sure what she was feeling. A potent combination of dread and anticipation and... It didn't bear thinking about. She'd save her emotions for later. Right now, there was a job that needed doing. She glanced over at Trig. The kid's face was pale behind his visor, but he still looked stupidly eager to see where they'd landed.
How you doing?
She asked. He nodded, keeping his eyes fixed on the airlock.
All green.
The airlock broke with a loud hiss, and a crown of condensation swirled around the edges of the door as it rolled back. The dull red light of Bug Hunt streamed in, casting an elongated oval on the corrugated decking. The lonely howl of an abandoned wind became audible. Koyich signaled with his hand, and four of the armored Marines scrambled through the airlock. After a few moments, one of them said,
Clear!
Kira had to wait until the remaining Marines exited the shuttle before they signaled for her and the entropists to follow. Outside, the world was split in half. To the east, the rust-colored sky held an evening glow, and Bug Hunt protruded above the tortured horizon, a swollen red orb, far dimmer than Epsilon Indi, the sun Kira had grown up with. To the west lay a realm of perpetual darkness, shrouded with starless night. Thick clouds hung low over the land, red and orange and purple, and knotted with vortices driven by the ceaseless wind. Lightning illuminated the folded depths of the clouds, and the rumble of distant thunder echoed across the land. The Ilmora had landed on what looked like a patch of cracked paving stones. Kira's mind automatically categorized them as artificial, but she cautioned herself against making assumptions. Surrounding the landing zone were open fields covered with what looked like black moss. The fields ascended into foothills, and the foothills into the bounding mountains. The snow-mantled peaks were rounded with age and wear, but their dark silhouettes possessed a solid bulk that still managed to be intimidating. Like on the fields and the foothills, glossy black vegetation grew up the sides of the mountains, black so as to better absorb the red light from their parent star. The buildings she had identified from space weren't visible at the moment. They lay farther up the valley, behind a flank of the neighboring mountain, perhaps two or three clicks away. She always found it hard to judge distances on new planets. The thickness of the atmosphere, the curve of the horizon, and the relative size of nearby objects were all things that took some time getting used to.
Dramatic,
said Falcone, coming up beside her.
It looks like a painting, said Nielsen, joining them.
Or something out of a game,
said Trig. To Kira, the place felt old beyond reckoning. It seemed unlikely it had been the homeworld of the vanished. For a sentient, technologically advanced species to evolve on a tidally locked planet would be extremely difficult. But she had little doubt the vanished had settled there long ago and had stayed for a long time thereafter. The Marines rushed about, setting up auto turrets around the shuttle, tossing drones into the air, which zoomed skyward with a nerve-scraping buzz, and posting sensors, active and passive, in a wide perimeter.
Form up!
Koyich barked, and the Marines assembled in front of the now-closed airlock. Then he trotted over to where Kira stood watching with Falcone and the entropists, and said,
We got 2 hours before the jellies make orbit.
Kira's heart dropped.
That's not enough time.
It's all the time we've got. It's all the time we've got, said Koyich. They're not going to risk hitting us with bombs or missiles or rods from God, so...
Sorry, what?
Falcone answered. Kinetic projectiles. Big heavy lumps of tungsten or something like that. They hit almost as hard as nukes.
Koyich jerked his chin.
That. The jellies aren't going to risk destroying you or the staff. They're going to have to come down here in person. If we can get into the buildings you spotted, we can fight a delaying action.
Buy you some time.
Hold out long enough and the Darmstadt might be able to give us some reinforcements. This ain't going to be a fight when in space, that's for damn sure.
Guess we can forget about proper containment procedures, said Kira.
Koyich grunted.
You could say that.
The first officer barked a few commands, and within moments, their group set out marching at double speed across the broken stones, each step of the 14 sets of power armor thudding like dire drums. Two of the Marines from the Darmstadt stayed behind with the shuttle. When Kira looked back, she saw them moving around the vessel, checking its heat shield for damage. The wind provided a constant pressure against Kira's side. After so long spent on ships and stations, the movement of air seemed strange, that and the unevenness of the ground. She did the math in her head. It had been close to 6 months since she had last stood on Adrastea. 6 months of closed rooms, artificial lights, and the stink of close-pressed bodies. Patches of black moss crunched under the soles of her boots. The moss wasn't the only vegetation nearby. There were clusters of fleshy vines, assuming they were plants, growing upon nearby rock formations. The vines tumbled like locks of greasy hair across the face of the stone. Kira couldn't help but note different features. Leaf-like structures with veins that formed reticulated venation, similar to earth dicots, staggered branching with deep ridges on the stems, no visible flowers or fruiting bodies. Looking was one thing, but what she really wanted was to get a sample of the plant's cells and start digging into its biochemistry. That was where the real magic was. An entirely new biome to explore, and she didn't dare stop to learn anything about it. They rounded the flank of the mountain, and by unspoken consent, the 19 of them stopped. Before them, in the low hollow of land at the head of the valley, lay the complex of alien buildings. The settlement was several clicks across, bigger even than Highstone, the capital of Wayland. Not that Highstone was particularly big by League standards. There had only been 84,000 people living there the year Kira had left. Tall, spindly towers stretched skyward, white as bone, and laced with a caul of the invading moss that had insinuated itself into every crack and flaw in the structures. Through broken walls, rooms of every size were visible, now drifted with dirt and obscured by opportunistic vines. An assortment of smaller buildings huddled in the spaces between the towers, all with tapered roofs and lancet windows empty of glass or other covering. There were few straight lines. Naturalistic arcs dominated the design aesthetic. Even in their half-ruined state, there was an attenuated elegance to the buildings that Kira had only seen in art or videos of pre-planned luxury communities on Earth. Everything about the complex felt intentional. From the curve of the walls to the layout of the paths that wound like streams throughout the settlement. The place was undeniably abandoned. And yet, in the light of the endless sunset, beneath the shelf of burning clouds, it felt as if the city wasn't dead. Just dormant. As if it were waiting for a signal to spring back to life and restore itself to the heights of its former glory. Kira breathed out. Awe left her without words.
Fool,
said Falcone, breaking the spell. He seemed as affected as she was.
Where to? Said Koyich.
It took Kira a moment to clear her mind well enough to answer. I don't know. Nothing jumps out at me. I need to get closer.
Forward march,
Koyich barked, and they continued down the slope toward the city. Next to Kira, the entropist said,
We are indeed blessed to see this, prisoner.
She felt inclined to agree. 2. The towers loomed ever higher as they approached the edge of the settlement. White was the predominant color among the buildings, but irregular panels of blue provided contrast to the structures, enhancing with a shot of vivid decoration in an otherwise barren cityscape.
They had a sense of beauty, said Nielsen.
We don't know that, said Falcone. Everything could be for some practical purpose.
Does it really look like that to you? The captain didn't answer. As they entered the city via a wide avenue from the south, an intense feeling of familiarity swept over Kira. It left her feeling displaced, as if she'd shifted through time. She had never been to that Twilight City before. But the soft blade had, and its memories were nearly as strong as her own. She remembered life, moving things, flying and walking, and machines that did the same. The touch of skin, the sound of voices, the sweet scent of flowers carried on the wind. And for a moment, she could nearly see the city as it had been, vital, vibrant, standing tall with hope and pride. Don't lose control, she told herself. Don't lose control. And she hardened her mental grip on the soft blade. Whatever happened that day, she was determined not to let the Xeno slip her grasp and run rampant. Not after her previous mistakes.
When do you think this was built?
Said Trigg. He gaped through his visor with undisguised wonder.
Centuries ago, said Kira,
recalling the sense of age from the soft blade's memories. Before we ever left Earth. Maybe even earlier.
Koyich glanced over his shoulder at her. Still no idea where to look?
She hesitated.
Not yet. Let's head to the center.
With two of the Marines in power armor taking the lead, they continued deeper into the maze of buildings. Overhead, the wind whirling between the tapered towers sounded as if it were trying to whisper secrets. But listen though she did, Kira could make no sense of the words in the air. She kept scanning the buildings and streets, looking for anything that might spark a specific memory. The spaces between the structures were narrower than humans preferred. The proportions were taller, thinner, which matched the images she had seen of the vanished. Rubble blocked the avenue in front of them, forcing them to detour around. Vera and Joris stopped and bent to pick up a piece that had fallen from one of the nearby towers.
It does not look like stone, said Vera.
Nor metal, said Joris. The material...
Doesn't matter now, said Koyich. Keep moving!
Their footsteps echoed off the sides of the buildings, loud and disconcerting in the empty spaces.
Sicked!
Kira spun toward the noise, as did the rest of the squad. There, by an empty doorway, a rectangular panel flickered with artificial light. It was a screen of some sort, blue-white and distorted with cracks. No text or pictures appeared, just the pale field of light.
How can there still be power?
Said Nielsen in an overly calm voice.
Maybe we're not the first ones to visit, said Trigg.
Kira started toward the screen, and Koyich put up an arm to bar her way.
Hold up. We don't know if it's safe.
I'll be fine, she said, and walked past him. Up close, the glowing panel produced a faint hum. Kira put a hand on it. The screen didn't change.
Hello?
She said, feeling slightly foolish. Again, nothing happened. The wall next to the panel was covered with grime. She wiped some of it away, wondering if there was anything beneath. There was. A sigil lay there, set within the surface of the material, and the sight of it froze her in place. The emblem was a line of fractal shapes, coiled close, one upon another. Kira couldn't decipher any meaning, but she recognized the language as belonging to the same all-important pattern that guided the soft blade's existence. Unable to take her eyes off the sigil, she backed away.
What is it?
Falcone asked.
I think the vanished made the great beacon, she said.
Koyich readjusted the sling on his gun.
What makes you think that?
She pointed. Fractals. They were obsessed with fractals.
That doesn't help us now, said Koyich. Not unless you can read them.
No.
Then don't waste—
Koyich stiffened, as did Falcone. Alarmed, Kira checked her overlays. There, on the other side of Bug Hunt, another 4 jelly ships had just emerged out of FTL. They were coming in hot, a lot hotter than the first batch of enemy vessels.
God damn it, said Falcone between clenched teeth. How many ships did they send?
Look, the rest of the jellies are increasing their thrust so they'll arrive at the same time, said Koyich. He'd gone preternaturally calm, flipping the switch from serious to combat mode. Kira recognized the change in Falcone also.
We've got an hour to find this staff, maybe less. Pick it up, everyone. Double time.
With the Exos still at the lead, they trotted deeper into the city until they arrived at an open plaza with a tall standing stone, cracked and weathered, in the center. As Kira examined the stone, she experienced a shock similar to when she'd seen the sigil, for it was covered with a fractal pattern, and when she looked at it closely, the smallest details of the pattern seemed to swim, as if moving of their own volition. She felt as if the ground had shifted. What was happening to her? Tingles crawled across the surface of her skin, and the soft blade stirred as if restless.
Anything? Said Koyich.
I don't recognize anything. Not specifically.
Right, we can't wait. Hawes, set up a search pattern. Look for anything that might resemble a staff. Use the drones, use everything we've got. If you haven't found the staff by the time the jellies enter orbit, then we focus on digging in and denying them territory. Yes, sir.
The lieutenant and Corporal Nishu split the rest of the Marines into 4 squads, and then they dispersed into the buildings. All of them save Koyich, who took up a position by the side of the plaza and, from the pack he was carrying, removed a comms dish that he aimed at the sky.
Nevarez, he said, fiddling with the controls. I'm hooking you up to the squad's feed. See if you recognize anything.
Kira nodded and sat hunched on the ground next to the standing stone. A contact appeared on her overlays. She accepted, and a grid of windows filled her vision. Each window displayed the video from a Marine or a drone. It was confusing to watch, but she did her best, shifting her attention from one window to the next as the Marines hurried through the decaying buildings, rushing through one empty room after another. And still, she felt no sense of certainty. They were in the right place, of that she was sure. But where in the complex they were supposed to go continued to elude her.
Tell me,
she commanded the soft blade, desperate. No answer was forthcoming. And with each passing moment, Kira was aware of the jellies growing closer. Falcone paced around the perimeter of the plaza, along with Trigg and Nielsen, keeping watch. By one side, the Entropist stood huddled next to a panel that had come loose from the corner of a building, studying whatever lay underneath.
Nevarez,
said Koyich after a while. She shook her head.
Still nothing.
He grunted.
Hawes, start scouting for a location we can hole up in.
Yes, sir.
The sergeant replied over the radio. After half an hour of near silence, Falcone came over to Kira and squatted next to her while resting Francesca across his knees.
We're almost out of time, he said quietly.
I know, she said, eyes darting from one window to the next.
Can I help?
She shook her head.
What are we missing?
No idea, she said. Maybe it's been too long since the soft blade was here. A lot could have changed. I'm afraid I brought us all here to die. He scratched his chin and was quiet for a few seconds.
I don't believe that. This has to be the place. We're just not looking at it right. The soft blade doesn't want to die or get captured by the jellies, does it?
No, she said slowly.
Okay. So why show you this system, this city? There has to be something the blade expects you to find. Something so obvious we're missing it.
Kira glanced at the standing stone.
We're not looking at it right.
Can you give me control of a drone? She said, calling over to Koyich.
Just don't crash it, said the first officer. We're gonna need everyone we've got.
Kira linked the drone to her overlays and then closed her eyes so she could better concentrate on the feed from the machine. It was hovering next to a tower half a click away.
What are you thinking? Said Falcone. She could feel his presence next to her.
Fractals, she said.
Meaning?
She didn't answer, but zoomed the drone straight into the air, higher and higher, until it was flying above the top of even the tallest tower. Then she looked at the settlement as a whole, really looked, trying to see not only the individual buildings, but also the larger, overall shapes. A flicker of recognition came from the soft blade, but nothing more. She turned the drone in a slow circle, angling it up and down to make sure she wasn't missing anything. From the air, the towers were stark and beautiful, but she didn't allow herself to linger over the sight, dramatic though it was. A crack echoed through the city from the west. Kira's eyelids flew open, and as she looked for the source of the sound, the image of the city slipped out of focus. Her perception shifted, and she saw what she'd been searching for. The decay of the buildings and the encroachment of the native flora had hidden it until that very moment. But she saw. The ancient outline of the city was, as she had suspected, a fractal, and the shape of it contained meaning. There, at the nexus of the pattern, where it coiled in on itself like a nautilus shell, there, at the center of it all. The structure that she identified was on the far side of the settlement, a low, dome-shaped place that, had it been on Earth, she would have thought was a temple from some long-dead civilization. But temple felt like the wrong word. If anything, mausoleum seemed more appropriate, given the pale starkness of the building. The sight of it triggered no memory or sense of confirmation from the soft blade, no more so than the city as a whole. That the building was important seemed undeniable, knowing the affinity the vanished had for fractals. But whether or not it had anything to do with the staff, Kira couldn't say. Dismayed, she realized she was going to have to guess. They didn't have time to wait for the Xeno to disgorge another fragment of useful information. They had to act, and they had to act now. If she chose wrong, they'd die. But hesitation would kill them just as surely.
Hawes, was that you? Said Koyich.
Yes, sir. We located the entrance to an underground structure. Looks like it's defensible.
Kira tagged the building on the drone's feed and then quit the program.
We might not need it, she said, standing. I think I found something.
3.
You think, but you're not sure, said Koyich.
That's right.
That's some seriously weak shit, Navarez. You can't give us a better idea than you think.
Sorry, no.
Fuck.
Falcone said, doesn't look like we can get there before the jellies land. Kira checked the position of the aliens. The first 3 ships were just entering orbit. Even as she watched, she saw them dipping lower as they entered the atmosphere.
We have to try.
Damn it, said Koyich.
Worst case scenario, we'll hole up in that building, try to fight off the jellies. They don't know where we're headed, so that gives us an advantage. Hawes, get 2 exos over to the location Navarez marked. Full speed. Everyone else, form up on me, fast as you can. AOP is about to go hot.
Yes, sir!
The first officer collapsed the comms dish and stowed it in his pack as they ran out of the plaza and down the nearest curving street.
Can the Ilmora give us any cover?
Kira asked. Tatupoa and another marine jogged out of a side street, joining them.
The jellies would just shoot it down, said Koyich.
The buzzing of drones grew louder as several of the machines took up positions high overhead, providing constant overwatch. The wind tugged at them, causing the drones to dip and sway as they fought to hold still.
The wallfish is on her way back, Falcone announced. Emergency burn. She'll be here before long.
Better tell them not to, said Koyich. That barge of yours doesn't stand a chance against the jellies.
Falcone didn't answer, but Kira could tell he disagreed.
What are you planning, Kira?
A couple of cassava howitzers in the right place could take out at least half the jellies, Falcone.
Can the wallfish get close enough?
Kira. Let Sparrow and Grigorovich worry about that. Falcone. Thudding along next to her in his power armor, Trigg looked nearly as worried as Kira felt.
Just stick close to me and you'll be fine, she said.
He flashed her a sickly grin.
Okay, just don't stab me with your suit. Not a chance.
A pair of booms shook the air, and 2 jelly ships pierced the cover of clouds and descended through the sunset sky on pillars of blinding blue flame. The vessels disappeared behind the towers near the eastern edge of the settlement, and then the roar of the rockets fell silent.
Move!
Koyich barked, although none of them needed urging. They were already running fast as they could. Hawes, Nishu, and the rest of the search teams rejoined them and took up formation alongside Kira and the others. The radio crackled in Kira's ear. One of the two Marines who had gone ahead said,
Sir, made it to the target. It's locked up tighter than the bank vault. No obvious entrance. Cut your way in if you can, said Koyich between short breaths. Whatever you do, defend that position at all costs. Roger that.
For a moment, Kira worried about the Marines damaging the staff. Then she shook off the worry. If they couldn't get into the building, the point would be moot regardless. To her left, Sanchez said,
Movement! 400 meters in closing!
Damn, they're fast, said Nielsen. She racked the slide on her snub-nosed rifle. Kira activated the targeting program on her blaster. A bright red crosshair appeared in the center of her vision. Then Sanchez swore in a language Kira didn't recognize and her overlays failed to translate.
They just took out my drone, he said. Mine too, said another Marine. Shit, said Hawes. Make that three. We have to get off the street, said Falcone. We're sitting ducks out in the open.
Koyich shook his head.
No, we keep pushing forward. If we stop, they catch us. 250 meters in closing, said Sanchez.
They could hear noises among the buildings now, thumping and clattering in the whine and buzz of drones. Kira reassessed her mental hold over the soft blade. Only what I want, she thought, doing her best to impress the notion on the Xeno. No matter how chaotic things became, no matter how much pain or fear she might end up in, she wasn't going to let the soft blade inadvertently hurt someone again. Never that. Then she willed the Xeno to cover her face. Even though she was wearing the skin suit helmet, she wanted the additional protection. Her vision went black for the length of a blink, and then she could see the same as before, only now with the addition of the hazy, violet bands of the local EM fields. Thick loops emanated from the walls of several nearby buildings, marking places where the power was still on. Why hadn't she looked before?
This is suicide, said Falcone.
He grabbed Kira by the arm and pulled her toward an open doorway in the nearest building.
This way! Stop! Shouted Koyich. That's an order! Bullshit! I'm not under your command, said Falcone.
Nielsen followed him, and also Trigg and the Entropists. After a moment, Koyich had no choice but to order the Marines to do the same. The ground level of the building was tall and lofty. Soaring pillars divided the space at regular intervals, a forest of stone trunks that branched as they approached the ceiling. The sight reminded Kira, with almost physical force, of her dreams.
Koyich stormed over to Falcone. You pull a stunt like that again and I'll have them pick you up and carry you.
He jerked the barrel of his blaster toward the Marines in power armor.
That's...
Falcone stopped as the noises outside grew louder. Kira saw movement in the street they'd just abandoned. The first jelly crawled into view, a tentacled squid, similar in forms to the ones Kira had encountered before. Following it were several more squids, a lobster-like creature, a chomper, and several more forms she'd only seen on the news. White, orb-shaped drones darted about over them, and farther back she spotted some kind of segmented vehicle flowing across the rubble-strewn street. At almost the same time, the jellies and the Marines released clouds of chalk and chaff, hiding each other from view.
Go, go, go!
Hawes shouted. Laser blasts and gunfire erupted, and a chunk of masonry exploded out of the pillar above Kira's head. She ducked and ran, staying close to Trigg's exo. Explosions sounded behind them. Falcone turned and fired his grenade launcher, but Kira didn't look back. Their only hope now was speed. The two Marines in the lead lowered their metal-clad shoulders and smashed straight through the wall in front of them. Another empty room, followed by another wall, and then they burst onto a narrow street.
Keep going!
Nielsen shouted. Kira looked for the Entropists and saw them dimly through the swirling chalk, ghost-like figures nearly doubled over, hands outstretched.
This way!
She called, hoping it would help guide them. Together, she and the rest of the group sprinted across the street and into another building. This one was smaller, with tall, thin corridors barely wide enough for the exos. With every step, the machine scraped flakes off the mossy walls, showering the floor. The Marines continued to bull forward, breaking past every barrier. Future archaeologists, Kira reflected, weren't going to be happy with all the damage. They passed through a room with shallow, pool-shaped depressions in the floor. Kira remembered the scent of perfumes and the sound of splashing water. Then an arcade with large, broken tubes of some transparent material extending upward along the walls. Bodies rising through space, both pairs of arms outstretched for balance. And then they broke through onto another street, wider than the first. The buzzing of drones grew louder, and Kira saw thread-like flashes of superheated air as lasers punched through the clouds of chalk surrounding them. Then one of the lobster-like jellies skittered around the side of the building high above, clinging to the wall like an oversized insect, and jumped onto the back of Tatupoa's armor. The man shouted and twisted, flailing his arms in a futile attempt to knock loose the chittering creature.
"Hold still!"
shouted Hawes, and a burst of gunfire erupted from his rifle. Each shot produced a pulse of pressure that Kira felt against the front of her chest. Ichor exploded from the side of the lobster, and it fell, twitching, to the cracked pavement. But it had accomplished its mission. The delay it caused was just enough for three squids to swarm around the building and close with them. The Marines weren't caught by surprise. The instant the squids entered their line of sight, the big chain guns mounted on the front of the two heavy exos sprang to life. Even through her helmet, and even through the soft blade's mask, the sound was painful and terrifying, visceral in its intensity. Kira continued to stumble forward, feeling as if her bones were being hammered. The three squids thrashed under the impacts of the Marines' explosive bullets. Several of their tentacles returned fire with blasters and guns and a whirling blade of death that buried itself in a wall down the street. One of the Marines threw a grenade. Falcone fired his launcher, and the paired set of blasts obscured the squids. Chunks of twitching flesh splattered the buildings and rained down around Kira. She ducked, shielding her face with an arm. Then they were inside again, and half the Marines turned to cover the rear. They spread to either side, using corners and rubble and what looked like high-backed benches for protection. Three of the men were bleeding, Tatupoa in his exo, the two others in skin suits. It looked like they'd all been hit by lasers. They didn't stop to tend their wounds. Without lowering his blaster, one of the two pulled out a canister of metafoam, sprayed his wound, and tossed the can to his comrade, who sprayed his own injury. Neither of them lost a step throughout the whole process.
"Go, go, out the back!"
shouted Koyich, continuing to retreat from the building entrance.
"How much farther?"
said Nielsen.
100 meters,
shouted Hawes.
Boom!
The walls and ceilings vibrated like a drumhead, and centuries worth of accumulated dust plumed into the air as the corner of the building caved inward. The ceiling sagged, and everywhere Kira heard creaks and squeals and tearing moans. She willed the soft blade to switch to infrared. Through the new opening in the side of the room, she saw the jelly vehicle directly outside, black and menacing, with a segmented carapace that reminded her of a giant pill bug. On its back, a huge mounted turret was taking aim at them. Trigg and Nielsen opened fire, along with the Marines. Then Joris and Vera surprised them all by stepping forward and, moving as one, slashing with their arms and shouting a shared word. A burst of searing light obscured the room. Kira blinked, fear jolting through her at being suddenly blind. Crimson dots mottled her vision as the light faded. In front of their group, she saw a fine net of monofilaments covering the walls, the broken corner of the building, and the vehicle outside, which was curled on its side and convulsing as tendrils of electricity crawled across the plates of its exposed carapace. In the distance, more jellies were approaching.
"Run!"
the entropist shouted. They ran.
"What did you do?"
Kira shouted.
"Magic!"
Vera answered, which was wholly unsatisfying, but Kira didn't have the breath to question her further. They broke through the back of the building and, across another plaza, Kira spotted the mausoleum-like structure she'd identified from the air. The two other armored Marines were crouched by the closed-off entrance, the blue-white light of cutting torches bright beneath their metal gauntlets. They switched off the torches and laid down covering fire as Kira and her companions sprinted across the plaza. One of the Marines next to Koyich stumbled and fell. Blood and bone sprayed from his knee. Trig picked him up with one hand and carried him the rest of the way to the temple. Kira dropped behind a slab of rubble, using it for cover while she caught her breath. If the jellies got close enough, she could take them out with the soft blade. But so far, they'd kept their distance. They knew what they were dealing with, and they were behaving accordingly, goddammit. Did they have to be so smart? A jelly drone popped up over the top of the slab. Nielsen fried it with a single burst of laser fire from her exo. Through her faceplate, she appeared red-faced and sweating. Strands of hair had broken free of her ponytail and fallen across her face. Behind another slab, Trig laid the Marine with the mangled knee onto the ground. "Redding," said the tag on the front of his skin suit. Sanchez ran over to them, and before Kira could believe what she was seeing, he took his blaster and sliced off the rest of the Marine's wounded leg. Redding didn't even scream, but he screwed his eyes shut during the cut. He must have been using a nerve block to stop the pain. Sanchez cinched a tourniquet around the stump of the leg, sprayed the bloody end with metafoam, and then slapped the man on the shoulder and joined the rest of the Marines in firing over the tops of the rubble. Kira looked at the front of the temple. The entrance was sealed with what looked like a plug of solid metal. The two Marines had only managed to cut into it a hand's breadth or less. Dirt showered her as Nielsen and Trig grabbed the slab of stone she was crouching behind and, with their exos, heaved it upright so it formed a barrier between them and the jellies gathering at the edges of the plaza. The Marines did the same with the other slabs, setting them in a semicircle before the temple.
"If you're gonna do something, now's the time,"
said Falcone, reloading Francesca from the pouch on his belt.
"Fuck that," said Koyich. "Use shape charges. Blow it open."
"No," said Kira. "You could destroy the staff."
Koyich ducked as bullets and shrapnel whined overhead. He pulled the tab on another canister of chalk and threw it into the center of the plaza.
"We'll get destroyed if we can't get in there."
An image flashed through Kira's mind of the moment when she'd ripped the transmitter out of the wall of the jelly ship.
"Just hold them off,"
she said, scrambling to her feet. Keeping her head down, she ran to the blocked entrance of the temple and put her hands against the cold metal. Sweat dripped into her eyes as she loosened her grip on the soft blade, just a fraction, and reached out with the suit, stretching and spreading herself like a rubber sheet pulled taut. "Don't lose control. Don't lose control." A bullet flattened itself against the metal above her head, spraying her with silvery spall. Kira hunched her shoulders and tried to ignore the constant battering explosions of gunfire and grenades. Her skin crawled as the soft blade tore open her skin suit and formed a web of knotting tendrils between her fingers. The tendrils extended outward, flowing across the metal surface, seeking and grasping with millions of hair-like feelers.
"Thule!"
Trig exclaimed. "Might want to hurry," Falcone said in a conversational tone. Kira pressed inward with the Xeno, driving it into every cranny and crevice and microscopic stress fracture. She felt the Xeno, felt herself, burrowing through the bonded structure of the metal, like tree roots digging through hard-packed earth. The metal was incredibly thick. Meters upon meters of it armored the entrance to the temple. What were they trying to keep out? She wondered. Then it occurred to her that perhaps the soft blade was the answer to that question. Heat radiated from the surface of the metal as it began to give.
"Get ready!"
she shouted. The moment she felt movement between her various extruded tendrils, she yanked, hard. With an anguished shriek, the metal parted. Glittering dust filled the air as the fibers of the suit pulled heavy, silver-gray chunks away from the building. A dark opening took shape before her. Overhead, three more jelly ships screamed across the sky, meteors trailing fire and smoke. From them fell scores of drop pods, evil seeds planted throughout the city. "Too late," Kira thought, triumphant. She returned the soft blade to herself, and again she was whole. 4. Bullets whined off the sides of the jagged metal, and laser blasts melted finger-sized holes, splattering molten droplets in every direction as Kira pushed forward into the darkness. Falcone followed close behind, then Trigg, Nielsen, and the rest of the squad. The Marines activated flat, hemispherical glow lights, which they tossed around the perimeter of the space. The room was huge and deep. Even with the crazed collection of lights, Kira recognized the sweep of the arched ceiling and the pattern of the tessellated floor. This place she had walked long ago, beside the Highmost, near the end of days. A graveyard chill gave her pause, and she said quietly, "Everyone be careful. Don't touch anything." Behind her, Hawes snapped orders, and the Marines took aim at the ragged opening they'd entered through.
"Hold this spot," said Koyich. "Don't let a single jelly past." "Sir, yes, sir."
As Kira ventured deeper into the darkness, Falcone joined her, as did Koyich, Nielsen, Trigg, and the Entropists. But they let her take the lead as she headed toward the back of the space. Now that they were inside the temple, Kira knew exactly where to go. There was no question in her mind. Ancient memories assured her that this was the right place, and that what she sought was just ahead. Gunshots continued to echo through the cavernous chamber, loud and thunderous. How long had the place lain in silence? And now the violence of jellies and humans fighting had shattered that peace. Kira wondered who the vanished would fault most if they were still around. 30 meters from the entrance, the room ended at an enormously tall, thin pair of outward curving doors, white and inlaid with fractal lines of blue. They were far more ornate than anything else she'd seen in the city. Kira raised a hand. Before she touched the doors, a ring of light appeared near the height of her head, overlapping the seam between the two doors. Then they parted without sound, sliding into the walls and disappearing into hidden recesses. Another room lay before them, smaller than the antechamber. It was heptagonal in shape, with a ceiling that twinkled as if with stars, and a floor that possessed a faint, iridescent sheen like that of a soap bubble. At each vertex of the room stood a crystalline obelisk, blue-white and translucent, save for the one opposite her, which was red and black. It, like the others, had a stern look, as if watching over the chamber with a disapproving gaze. But it was the center of the room that drew Kira's attention. 3 steps, too high and shallow to be comfortable for human anatomy, led to a dais, also heptagonal. From the dais rose a pedestal, and from the pedestal, a 4-sided case that sparkled like cut diamond. Within the diamond case, there hung suspended 7 shards, the staff of blue, now broken. Kira stared. She could not bring herself to understand or accept. "No," she whispered. Then alerts flashed in her overlays, and despite herself, she looked. A groan escaped her, and it echoed in the mausoleum of the vanished. 14 more ships had entered the system. Not jellies. Nightmares.